Reach Up the Science podcast with your girl and with an E.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 81 of the Root of the Suns podcast with your girl, Anne, with an E. If you are new here, welcome, welcome. I always love having new listeners, and it's always such a great pleasure to have you on. Make sure that you follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at the Root of the Science Podcast or the Root of the Science Pod. And to my loyal listeners who keep on coming, thank you so much. Because of you, we have recently reached a new milestone, over 8,000 downloads. Yeah, 80 is coming as long as you guys keep on listening. Now, let's get into today's episode. My guest today is Dr. Cosnet Lerato Rametse, born and raised in South Africa. In this episode, we learned that she has always wanted to work in science, and more specifically, she has always been curious about how the body worked, the pathology, and also wanting to learn and gain skills to contribute to understanding the pathologies of the body. This curiosity led her to study medicine. She discusses why she chose to be a clinician scientist in this particular episode. Currently, Lerato is a PhD candidate investigating the impact of the asymptomatic sexually transmitted infections on HIV susceptibility in the penis through the Division of Immunology at the University of Cape Town, South Africa. Lerato tells us about this fascinating research and why it is so important. She goes on to explain why she chose to specialize in the field of immunology and how she dealt with some of the social changes during her academic career. Tune in as we hear about all of this and so much more. Let's go. Hi, Lerato. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for having me.
It is such a great pleasure. I always love connecting with new people. So before we get started, let's give everybody a brief introduction. So who is Lerato? Where are you currently based? And just quickly, what are you currently doing?
So I was born and raised in Limpopo province, a rural area called Ramadikana, and eventually moved to Joburg and studied in Cape Town for my undergrad and current postgrad. So I'm currently a clinician by profession, but also I'm currently doing my PhD in the Division of Immunology at the University of Cape Town. So I'm based in Cape Town at the moment.
Oh, fantastic. So just in your little introduction, one can see that you've traveled quite a bit across South Africa. And in fact, you describe yourself as a person who loves to travel and you love music and, you know, people just generally. So before we get into the science, can you just explain why these different aspects of yourself are so important than you just being, you know, a scientist?
One of my beliefs is that human beings are created for community. So that's why I love people. I love networking. I love meeting people and I love doing life with people. And I feel that relationships, either whether it being family or friendship, I think they're very pivotal to just life and the essence of life. And I think music is life. I don't know if you like music, Anne, but wow.
I love music. I can't sing, but I love it.
Really? I absolutely love music. I actually sing as well. But I think that it's so powerful. I'm so grateful for all the artists that have created amazing music in different genres, because I also think it's a way of connecting with ourselves. I don't know what life would be without music.
I love it when I have guests who can sing. I think we should have like a whole like idols, but for like people in STEM, because like we have some really fantastic people who can sing. I'm not going to put you on the spot and say, please like belt me out a tune, but what type of music, what type of music do you like to sing when you are singing?
Mostly, firstly, it'll be Christian music, gospel music. I also love R&B. I love soul music. Those are the main ones.
We hear that you love music and you love traveling. So taking it back to the very beginning, how do you then end up in science? Take us, what are some of the influences and, you know, what is the root of your science? How did it all begin?
Whenever I'm asked this question, I always feel like it's so multi-layered, because I think that, you know, at different aspects of your life, you have, you know, different affirming experiences or different factors that kind of influence your passions. See, I grew up in a rural area, as I said, and it was just weird because, you know, there were a few things that I picked up, you know, growing up in a rural area, playing with other kids with different backgrounds, different economic statuses, and just seeing, you know, when you like, obviously now I think of it retrospectively and I'm like, wow, I saw so many people with malnutrition. But I knew, like, as a young child, I used to wonder, like, what is going on? Like, there's just something that's not normal about this hair. There's something that's not normal about tummy. Or even things like, you know, given our history in our country, a lot of people in the rural area had their partners work in the city, right? And so often what happened back in the days was that often people came back when they were sick, particularly in the era of when HIV started. And so a lot of people came back with TB. And it's stuff like that that got me very curious about health, but also science, because I wondered, you know, what is this disease? What is the physiology? What's going on? You know, what can I study to make me better understand the human body? What can I study that could also enable me with the skills and the capacity to be able to contribute to understanding some of the sufferings that, you know, our African population is facing dominantly. So that was, I think, the first layer to it. But also, my mother is a school teacher, and so she's always taught technology, science, and science technology. And so I think that also probably contributed to why I had an interest in science, because going to high school and primary school, I just always enjoyed the subject.
I can understand. And it's really beautiful that, you know, your surrounding kind of shaped where you wanted to be. And it's really great that those were like a major influence, and your mom as well, teaching these subjects. So one can really see that, you know, it really, really started from the grassroots. Okay, so given that context which you gave for us, did you always know that you wanted to be a doctor?
I mean, like I said, I think because of that curiosity around especially diseases that I saw in my community, I always knew I wanted to do something in health. But when I progressed to high school, I just knew from high school that, you know what, I absolutely love science, but I also still have this deep curiosity around understanding the human body, human pathology, but also wanting to learn and to get skills to contribute to the understanding of these pathologies. And that's how I ended up at med school, and I got into UCT Medical School. Actually, I did my undergrad here.
Okay, fantastic. You know, so Loretta, do you get this question a lot? You go to med school, you go to med school, and you do your time, and you're qualified as a doctor. One would then assume, you know, that's it, right? You should go and become a doctor, because I mean that's every almost black parent's dream, that their child becomes a doctor. What made you say, you know, and I want to go further? You know, because I actually only recently learned.
Firstly, to answer the question, do I get this question a lot? Yes, especially now that I'm doing my PhD. Everyone is like, why are you even here? Secondly, I had no idea that this is the route I would have taken. But basically, when I got to med school in my second year, I just kind of realized that I'm sure a lot of people are aware that medical school is quite, there's a lot to learn in very limited time.
Yeah.
And given the kind of personality that I have, what I was more curious about and my passions, I found myself struggling a lot in terms of not having enough time to explore what we were taught. So I just felt like a lot of the data that we were taught was more of this is what's been shown and this is what you just need to know in order for you to be a good person. I felt like there was not enough time to say, but how was it generated? And also to just even scrutinize, you know, some of the data that we use to set up guidelines in terms of managing our African populations. What I found is that a lot of the data and the textbooks were founded in first world countries. And that concerned me a lot because I was like, this is great. And I'm in no way not appreciating the work that's been done, but where is the work that's been done in our populations? And are they the same? If people were to do more of the same work in our context, would they find the same values? How we defined certain pathologies? Would it be the same for different ethnic backgrounds? You know, stuff like that. But I don't think being just a medical student afforded me the opportunity to explore those things because, again, as I said, the timetable is quite packed. It's really, really busy and all of that. But fortunately enough, it was just such a wonderful unveiling because I don't know if you know the late Professor Bongani Mayosi.
Yes.
Around 20, bless his soul, around 2011, 2012, when I was in my second year, he actually pioneered this program called the UCT Intercalated Program. And the vision that he had, together with Professor Katz Ari, and the vision that he had was to actually promote the generation of clinician scientists in Africa as a whole, because at the moment we do have very few clinician scientists, and of the clinician scientists that we do have in our country, it's often people that have had to take a very long route or they've done it later on in their ages. And so he felt that, no man, what if we also start a program in our developing countries that would not only give people the chance to engage in the clinical aspects of things, but also in research, also at a younger age, but also without having to go through the hustle of, you know, specializing first and waiting for many, many years, because that's what people like him had to go through before they could do their PhDs. And so he started the program around 2011, 2012, and I was fortunate enough to be amongst the first group to be part of that program. It's been growing since then. It's still ongoing at UCT. I know the vision and the aim is that hopefully in the future, this program could be formalized in other universities around the country because we do need more clinician scientists. And when that was presented in our class, in my second year, I just knew it was for me. The way they presented it and how they were like, you know, do you feel that you know, you're curious, you are asking, they literally spoke to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, they made a program
for me.
I'm so excited. I applied, went to the interviews, everything, and it was successful. And what the program does is that in between medicine, it gives you the opportunity to do an honors degree. And it's their way of saying, have a taste of how the research world is like, so that
yes.
you kind of decide to do a PhD. Because the ultimate goal for them was to get people, especially medical doctors, to do PhDs. And once you have that experience, then you can decide at which level you'd like PhD. Yeah.
wow, I love this idea. It's absolutely fantastic. And it goes to show the importance of people who've kind of walked this path previously. Like you said, that in the past, people had to go kind of the long way around to become a clinician scientist. But now they kind of taking you, showing the map and kind of cutting that long route and giving you sort of, dare I say, a shortcut. And also at the same time, it's really great because it kind of shows the younger generation that there is another whole aspect to being a doctor. Like you said, there are people who want to work in medicine or who want to be doctors, but they also have got that curiosity bug of a scientist. Not saying that medical doctors aren't curious, but, you know, just that research bug that they want to do. And I think this is such brilliant work, and I really hope that it does get rolled out to other universities across South Africa, across Africa, because we definitely need to hear more about people who are in this line of work. Like I said, I only knew about this, I think, sometime last year, where I realized this was actually a field. So mind you, that means a lot of people don't even know that this is something that you can get into. So yeah, kudos to you, and kudos to being one of the first people to be part of that program. I absolutely love the vision.
Thank you. And definitely, really hoping that it gets formalized in different institutions and more people jump onto the wagon. And yeah, looking forward to how the future looks like, especially when it comes to this career. And I think it's really exciting if it's something that you're really passionate about. Yeah,
Definitely. Okay, so currently you are a PhD candidate in immunology, like you said. So can you just tell us a bit about what you're currently researching and why it is so important?
I'm working on a PhD project, as you rightfully said, in the division of immunology, with my primary supervisor being Professor Clive Gray. And we are looking to investigate the impact of asymptomatic sexually transmitted infections on HIV susceptibility in the male penis. Essentially, what we're trying to look for is how, you know, the presence of asymptomatic sexually transmitted infections influence the immune environment in the male penis, and how that increases or that may increase susceptibility in HIV transmission. I mean, we know that currently it's very well known that the majority of the population that is affected by HIV, well, at least on record, is women of reproductive age. And because of this well-known fact, a lot of studies have really looked at women in terms of trying to understand HIV transmission and in terms of trying to derive HIV preventative strategies. And there's been very limited studies around the male genital tract and understanding how HIV transmission happens within the male genital tract. So, other aspects of the studies within the study is to try and understand these mechanistic roles or mechanisms that underpin HIV susceptibility in males, because we know that the commonest mode of transmission of HIV at the moment is through heterosexual transmission. So obviously both the males and females involved, but for some reason, well, not for some reason, because I gave the reason, a lot of the studies are quite female based in terms of understanding this HIV transmission. And so I think it's very important that we also start putting a focus on understanding HIV transmission in the male genital tract and try and come up with preventative strategies that are targeted towards males specifically, alternative to the existing ones such as circumcision.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. Again, I didn't know that most studies are actually targeted towards the female rather than the male. So in the work that you're doing, you said you'd want to look at other methods other than circumcision. So is it too soon for us to understand or to find out what these other preventative measures might be?
We hope to eventually get. So, for example, by exploring or understanding what increases susceptibility within the male penis or an uncircumcised penis, one can use those factors such as like barrier function proteins, T cells activations and locations. One can come up with things like gels that would target those specific role players.
Okay.
To either dampen them or increase them, depending on what we find. Because as I said, very little is understood about the main mechanisms at a molecular levels that underlie the susceptibility. Within even the foreskin itself, what we know based on very good clinical trials is that circumcision protects men from getting HIV at like 60%. But what we don't know are the mechanisms that underlie that protection. So by exploring, trying to understand those mechanisms, maybe we might find targets that we can use to generate things like gels, for men to apply on their penises instead of removing their foreskins that would target those different aspects. What my project looks at specifically is looking at barrier proteins, because we definitely appreciate that. And based on some existing literature, little as it is, that barrier protein and barrier function in the male penis is quite important in terms of its role in protection against HIV transmission. And so we can use those mechanics that we find to then start thinking of generating things like gels to target those aspects to prevent or dampen their susceptibility to getting HIV.
Wow, interesting. So I don't know if this is possible, but in terms of the research, you have this idea where you say that you potentially want to do this gel. Does it have an element where, you know, the qualitative data aspect where you talk to maybe males in terms of would they be willing to do this as an alternative? Is there an element with that where you kind of get some, I don't know, social acceptance data rather, in terms of if this was introduced, would the men be willing to take this up and actually use it as another form? Because I mean, we all know that circumcision has got a cultural element to it as well. It's not just for medical purposes. It's got a lot of cultural, for various different cultures and religions, people, that's why boys are circumcised. So do you think, or is there going to be that element where your study will look at that, where people will be like, okay, we want to maybe take this up as opposed to our cultural ways of us doing the circumcision?
That's such a great and very interesting question. You know, when I started this project, I must say, I was very narrow-minded in that I thought everyone was for circumcision, right? And the more I engaged, the more I realized, in as much as there's a cultural / religious element to circumcision, there's also a whole lot of group of men who are actually not keen for circumcision. And so I think, yes, I got a bit taken aback when I noticed that, and I started reading a lot about that. And, you know, there's a lot we can discuss about the reasons they provide for not wanting circumcision, but maybe that will be for another day. But what it made me appreciate is that they, in as much as there are people that appreciate circumcision, and I appreciate it because of the impact it's having on HIV transmission, but they are still groups of men who do not want to get circumcised. And what do we do about those groups? I mean, just looking at the statistics, when the major trials showed the efficacy of circumcision in terms of its protection with HIV, and our government started setting up projects to just offer free circumcision. They had set targets, but I think within the first 2 years of rolling out circumcision, they only reached, according to the publishment, they only reached 40% of their target, which comes to speak to the fact that the uptake of circumcision is not as high as we think it is. It is higher than other countries, but it's not as high as we had hoped for it to be. And so that should lead one to appreciate that there is a population and a group of men who want to get circumcised. And therefore, I think when it comes to thinking about prevention strategies and alternative prevention strategies, one shouldn't think about, it's not about abolishing one or the other, but I think it's about trying to cover as many people as possible with different strategies.
Wow, that's so interesting. That's so interesting. I also assumed that it was a higher population of people who are getting circumcised, because again, in my naivety, I assumed that, you know, for cultural purposes and religious purposes, that's why people do it. But, you know, like you said, there's a growing population who will definitely appreciate probably this alternative, and it just supports even more reason for you guys to do the research while you're doing. And I think it just goes to show how important it is then that people might be like, I'd actually opt to take this as an alternative to what's currently being offered. So kudos to you and your team.
You know, doing a qualitative study to ask people, hey guys, if we did a gel, would you guys take it? I think that's really interesting. Something that I'm noting down, and I think it would be actually really cool to you know, get an objective answer to that question. Yeah.
I brought that up was because for my research, I'm doing sort of a mixed method research where it's got the scientific aspect or the natural science aspect, but it's really forcing me to think on the social science aspect, because I think sometimes in science, the way we approach science is that we think we've got a solution. Like we see a problem as scientists and we want to do this and this is going to help solve. But then it's like, you know, have you spoken to the people? Do they think it is a problem? You know, we might think it's a problem because we've read all of these papers and we've read all of these journals. So I'm starting to appreciate that sort of thinking. Really, really important that the solution that you are wanting to give out, do the people actually want to accept it? So yeah, you're welcome. And kudos to my supervisor for that, because you always ask me that question every single time I come up with something. So he's always like...
amazing. That's so amazing. And I think I'm so fortunate that you had the opportunity to actually then somehow be able to incorporate that aspect.
I love the fact that you are sort of thinking and you took note of that possible suggestion of engaging, thinking of that whole part of engaging the communities if they would. Sorry, I'm saying communities because that's who I deal with. Engaging with people if they would actually be interested in this work. But yeah, kudos. I really love your work, and it's quite interesting. So just a little side note, why immunology? Why not cardiology? Why not pediatrics? Is there a specific reason why you went to immunology?
I always get asked that. I get asked that because a lot of medical students don't really like immunology, which is...
Yeah.
But... for me, I've always found it to be so fascinating. So the little time we got to do some immunological aspects to diseases in med school, I got so excited. I feel like the immune system is everywhere. and it's in every organ system. And that's one of the things that drew me to immunology, the fact that even if you did cardiology, you still have to have some level of understanding of the immune system, because whatever pathology you'll be dealing with in cardiology, in urology, in GIT, you would still have to understand the immune system because it's everywhere. And what I've come to learn and appreciate about immunology and the immune system is that it really has an impact, not just in the normal functioning of the body of different organ systems, but also in many pathologies. So to understand a lot of diseases, you do have to understand the role that the immune system has in those pathogenic pathways. So that's why I'm so interested in the immune system and immunology specifically.
That's quite interesting. But, you know, I have to say that now the field of immunology has gotten a huge beef in interest. I mean, the spotlight, thanks to COVID, and, you know, people are more aware that there is a field. Again, I'm going to say this because I always say this, that I didn't even know there was a field called immunology. I really didn't even know that there's, I swear to God, like, I know people studied like viruses or whatnot, but I had such a shallow understanding of the health sciences, because for me, when I thought health sciences, I thought doctor, dentist, let's see who else. I thought audiologist because I wanted to be one, maybe a physiologist. Like those, like such a shallow understanding of the health sciences profession and what is actually out there. But I mean, with this whole COVID situation, these professions such as virology and immunology, and also because of Twitter, there was that Black and Immunology Week. And I was like, oh my God, there's a whole field, you know? So it's really great. I know, but I'm saying this because I know there are people who are out there like me. So please don't judge me. Don't judge me. Yeah, so no, I think now people are understanding, like, okay, maybe there's a huge more buzz for immunology, but I think in the past, a lot of people are like, why, you know? So it's pretty interesting that you chose that field, and I love your answer for it. So I wanted to then go back to where you were telling us that in the beginning, well, I know you told me that you've always been very gifted academically, and this has been sort of like a blessing and a bit of like a challenge. You had what you called separate from familiar spaces. So how can you just elaborate further with that? Because I found that quite interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we discussed at the beginning, that I believe in community and relationships and doing life with people. And so it's a huge aspect of who I am. And so I went to a small primary school in a small Afrikaner town in Dendron Primary School. And so most of the people that I went to primary school with, we all kind of went to the same high school. So you can imagine we formed deep relationships from literally grade one all the way to high school. So I always had deep relationships with my classmates. Our classes were always friends, you know. I still have people that I'm still connected to now from my primary school, because life was so great, and even in high school. But when I got to high school, in grade nine, because of my academic performance, I was progressed to the next grade. And so I had to start grade 10 within the first three months of the year. So that meant that I had to leave that class, you know, and this is the class that I've always been with basically my whole life. These were my people. And so I had to now get into a new class. These are people that were a year ahead of me, even though some of them were people that were in the same primary school, but they were not in my class, you know. So by familiar spaces, I mean, I had to now, you know, reconnect, form new relationships, get to know new people. Not that I'm against meeting new people, but that was really difficult,
yeah.
Right? Because we had dreams and visions together that, oh, we're going to get to matric together. This is how we're going to do school trips. This is how we're going to high school. This is how we're going to life in grade 12, you know, all these things, you know, because as human beings, as I said, above and beyond the achievements, it's about the connection with other people and just doing life and growing. So that was really difficult for me to transition from in high school. But it's funny because it happened again in varsity. Medical school is also feels like a family because you study for 6 years. You are with the same people for 6 years, basically. To be honest, by the second year, your class feels like family. You know everyone. Everyone knows you. You engage with everyone. We know each other because we know we're going to be together for 6 years. You form really, you form strong relationships with people. If you're a social person, that is of which I appreciate
the importance
of life. And so, again, then comes this program that really, 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 really gets me excited, honestly. But at the same time, what it meant is that I had to then let go of my class that I bonded with in the first 2 years of my medical school. And I had to join a new class. That's when I did my BSc Med Honours in Infectious Diseases and Immunology. And then I had to go back and rejoin third year. So what that meant is that the class that I had started with in first year was a year ahead of me now. And that was also a very difficult transition because, again, new spaces, new friendships. And again, you plan these things. In first year, you know, in the clinical years, this is going to be my clinical partner. You've already planned that this is what we're going to do at grad ball. Oh, my word. I can't wait. It's just, you know, it's that I had to deal with having to let go of my previous classes and starting a whole new life. It was so difficult. But it's okay because I still met amazing people even in the two parts and it worked. But it was sacrifice for sure. Very difficult because I still remember even when the class that I started with graduated, I was so happy for them. Still didn't regret my choices that I made, but it was like, oh, my people, you know?
Yeah. Well, you see, I really love that because this is some things that we don't really talk about because, you know, this whole moving and shifting of how you had a specific goal and a specific vision. And with that specific goal and that vision, you had to sort of get out of that idealistic plan that you had in your head. And I think it also goes to show the importance of, you know, staying in your lane and sticking it through, even though some other people seem to be like ahead, but you can take that moment to be like, okay, I know why I'm here. And it's not always easy. It really isn't. So the fact that you are able to go through it and come out of it, it's really quite interesting. I think, I found it very interesting because I think a lot of other people can relate for various different reasons, be it moving to a new country or moving to a new city. There's always that, like, I had a plan. And I personally, for me, I had it when I transitioned from honors until my my master's to my PhD because you know, honors level, everybody's like a family and we all like stress together. That master's is like, oh my God, I'm on my own, you know. So it's quite different, and you kind of have to meet different people. So yeah, I really appreciated you being open and honest about that. Mm. Yeah. So Lerato, we've had such a fantastic chat, and we can talk for hours, clearly. But I would just love for us to sort of wrap it up. We've heard your journey coming from when you were a young rural girl who loves music, and now you moved and you did medicine, and you went on to do this clinical research to become a clinician scientist. Well, you are a clinician scientist. For somebody who's listening and is inspired by your journey, be it for STEM in general or just for life, what sort of little golden nuggets would you give them of some lessons that you've learned along the way?
I think to start off generally, in as much as I know that sometimes in life we don't have many options, but if you do have the option, don't ever do things out of convenience. Do it because you really want to and because your heart is there. Because I think, and like I said, this is me appreciating that sometimes we do have to do things for convenience because life doesn't offer us the same options. But if you do have the option, do things because you really want to do them, not because it's convenient, not because it looks great, not because it sounds great. Do it because you really like it, because I think it just makes the pursuit of whatever it is way more worthwhile to do it because you love it and you enjoy it. I think that's really important. In terms of pursuing science specifically, same thing, but it's a space. I think STEM is a great space for people that are curious. Like, you need to be curious, you know, and there's room. I'm so grateful for so many of the transformations that are happening, that are allowing, and the doors that have opened for people, more and more people to enter into the space, and even women. There's still a lot of challenges, but at least there's progress. So there is room, and there's room for everyone. And yeah, come join us, guys. Come do it. It's exciting.
Yes. Come through and come join us. Oh man, I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey, and also just the amazing work that you're doing. I wish you all of the best.
Thank you so much, and it was really nice chatting to you.
Yeah, and to everybody else who's tuned in, thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Root of the Science podcast with your girl Anne with an E. Until next time, goodbye.